We conclude our series this morning with Supreme Court justice candidates. This morning it's David Overstreet. Yesterday morning it was Judy Cates. This race is what I consider one of the most important in the state of Illinois. I know presidential race. I know fair tax, but I think this drives people. Well, you get an idea, David, about, first off, Dave, morning. How are you, pal?
Good morning, Tom. Good to be with you.
You get an idea of the importance of this on the national level because of the response to Amy Coney Barrett. But when you get to the Supreme Court of Illinois, I don't know how it gets more personal when it comes to all the things that go on, you know, in the state of Illinois, especially in COVID-19. So, I mean, it's an important role, and it goes on, doesn't have terms. This is big, Dave, but I'm not telling you anything you don't already know.
Well, Tom, you're absolutely correct. You know, we've been served by Justice Lloyd Carmire here in the 5th Judicial District for the last 16 years. He has performed honorable service. He's changed the face of the judiciary in Southern Illinois for the better. And, you know, these races don't come up very often. I'm running for a 10-year term, and so, you know, to represent the southern 37 counties, and that's Taylorville to Cairo and River to River on the court for the state of Illinois is a great honor to make this run and to be in a position where I can serve the public at this level if they give me that opportunity on November 3rd.
Since you've been a judge, what do you consider a defining moment, maybe not even public, but something you knew at the time in your own mind was a defining moment for you personally in your responsibilities at the bench?
Well, you know, I think back to my service as a trial court judge. And, you know, I served as a circuit judge for almost 10 years before serving on the appellate court the last 3.5 years. And I've been blessed to serve for those 13 and a half years, the public and the judiciary. But I always think back to my service on Monday afternoons in Jefferson County in juvenile court, abuse and neglect cases, handling those and making those decisions about children and their families and when, you know, children are just in incredibly traumatic situations for them. And I always tell people that was the most challenging part of my work as a trial judge and you know, it's still the work I'm most proud of. So that's one thing that sticks in my mind.
You know, we've heard impartiality and transparency and all these euphemisms when it comes to courts. And as I said, the national level, we've been talking about Supreme Court decisions as well. So whether it's the Supreme Court of the United States or the state of Illinois, how do we see such wildly different opinions when they're supposed to be reading from the same law book? Some people call it legislating for the bench, and we've heard the term policy in Amy Coney Barrett last night, and, you know, policy can't define you. You have to look at, you know, the data in the law book. But how does it happen? How do we have such wildly different opinions on the same letters?
It's different judicial philosophies, and I come down as trying to be a judge that, you know, and I've called myself a constitutional conservative. And what that means to me is trying to follow the letter of the law in cases that come before me and applying the fact to those, to the law, and then above all applying our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, both, you know, the United States and the state. And so, but, it, you know, if you look at what Justice Scalia, as he defines it, I am a fan of Justice Scalia and his way of going about, you know, the business when he was on the court when he was alive. But originalist is someone who looks at the United States Constitution and what the meaning of the amendments meant at the time, and tries to apply that meaning to today. And then textualist is someone who looks at the laws that are passed and looks at the words first and foremost, above legislative history about what a legislator might have meant, but what do the words say? And so it's a philosophy. It's a philosophy of judicial restraint, of, as you mentioned, not being a policymaker. I'm not running for Congress. I'm not running for state representative or state senator. The legislative body is the voice of the people to enact policy. It's the job of a judge to do their best to, again, apply the law as written and apply our constitutions.
So why so long to hear court decisions from the Supreme Court, crucial decisions, delayed while in some cases the problem worsens? I very often, and I think this is the best example, is the pension legislation, the amount of time it took the Supreme Court to say yay or nay. And we see it in murder cases on and on. Why so long? Why does the wheels of justice, why do they turn so slowly, David?
Well, it takes time to go through the circuit courts, and then the appellate court where I sit in the 5th District, the process, it takes a while for those cases to reach us. Now, I will say this. I've done my best. Cases that are, once they are argued in front of the appellate court, and, you know, we sit in panels of three. We don't sit, you know, by ourselves, but we're in panels of three, and it is a team effort, you know, collaboration and discussion and before decisions are rendered, but try to render decisions deliberately or in a deliberative nature. So that takes some time, but also as expeditiously as possible, so that justice is not delayed. That's what I try to do, and it doesn't always work out that way, and I suppose that's the way most judges feel. But it's there are several individuals involved, and sometimes it takes longer than either it should or we would want it to.
But it's interesting, Dave, because, you know, when you and I were speaking earlier, you talked about the defining moment of the bench and the importance of those decisions and who's waiting. Children, parents are waiting to hear that. Shouldn't that be part of the understanding here, that when we've got a law like this or a piece of legislation or whatever that affects people so profoundly and we leave them in limbo for these long periods of time, if that's the most defining moment, the importance, the personal importance of the decision-making, shouldn't that be taken into consideration instead of almost a seeming indifference to the people who are waiting?
Yes, absolutely. And the Illinois Supreme Court several years ago recognized this in child custody cases, and that there's rules regarding timing. The appellate court is to render a decision within a certain amount of time that the case comes before them. And so that is something that the courts, at least the last few years, have recognized and have tried to address.
You know, there's been an acrimonious content, in particular the Supreme Court race, in the last few weeks. There's been a number of different issues. The Second Amendment is one of them. Your challenger recently challenging you to a gun range shootout. As she told me yesterday, it was a turkey shootout, which, by the way, does not constitute shooting a turkey. I want to be clear about that. It's a target. But when it comes to this, she's saying, you got a FOID card? Let's see it. Are you a supporter of the Second Amendment? The challenge here to this gun range shootout, how did you receive that? What was your response more specifically?
Well, I never even heard about it until she put out her press release back last Monday. But I'm not going to engage in those type of nonsense political games. I'm not going to challenge her to race me in a 5K or to play a round of golf or play a game of ping pong with me either. It's just political desperation, in my belief, on my opponent's part. You know, as far as the FOID card, I've got a FOID card. I've had a FOID card in the past, and I don't know why she's so fixated on that. And I really don't see the need to play her political games just because she asked to see it. So I'm not going to do it. So she can believe me or not, but I do have a FOID card. And I'm the one endorsed by the Illinois State Rifle Association, the Illinois Fraternal Order of Police State Lodge, and a slew of Southern Illinois sheriffs. So I'm proud of those endorsements, and I'm just not going to play political games with my opponent.
You know, what allows this going on, the environment, when you look at the Second Amendment and people in the state of Illinois are feeling threatened, you've seen the substantial issues when it comes to getting your FOID card through the mail. It's interesting, David. I was looking at the charges filed against the man for shooting back and forth in Carbondale a night before last. They charged one of them for not having a FOID card. It's the first time I'd seen that in some time. I was kind of encouraged by that. In any event, you look at this and the Second Amendment, but, you know, when they talk about gun ownership, more and more I seem to look at this issue when it comes to guns in Illinois as the legislature undermining the Second Amendment by oppressive gun store legislation, cost prohibitive, limiting your access to the guns like there's another tact when it comes to the Second Amendment and some people's desire to suppress gun ownership in the state of Illinois?
Well, you know, I can't comment on specific legislation. Any issues that are likely to come before the court, and certainly Second Amendment issues are likely to come before the Illinois Supreme Court. But, you know, what I tell people is, look, above all else as a judge, it's my job to uphold all of our constitutional rights, and that's the Second Amendment, that's the First Amendment, that's the Fourth Amendment, and that's what I've tried to do as a judge, whether it's popular or not. You know, one of the great things about our judiciary in this country and in the state is we have an independent judiciary. And in fact, Canon 3 of the Illinois Code of Judicial Conduct says a judge should be unswayed by partisan interest, public clamor, or fear of criticism, and also should be faithful to the law and maintain professional competence in it. And that's what I've tried to do. And but I'm also prohibited from, again, talking about specific legislation, but I am, again, honored that voters have put their trust in me, and including the Illinois State Rifle Association with their endorsement.
You know, when it comes to this, there's a certain level of sophistry that's employed, I note, when it comes to talking about gun rights in the state of Illinois, and they always kind of seem to go to the common denominator, hunters. But that's not the reason why the Second Amendment is there. It's protection, no. It's about government, it's tyranny, and so often whenever I discuss this issue, people gloss over the fact the real reason the Second Amendment exists.
That's right. You know, the Second Amendment, it's part of our Bill of Rights, the rights of citizens, you know, against their government, against laws infringing upon their rights from the government. And so it really had nothing to do with hunters.
David, in a press release issued by your opponent last week, in no uncertain terms, she calls for a response, for an accounting, that you, simply put, you let a rapist and sex offender go. David, what's your explanation for the accusations?
It is outrageous that my opponent would basically exploit the case involving a young child for political purposes. What she's owned the ad. It was put out by a committee, but her press release owned that position, as you've mentioned. And basically, you know, her position is full of lies and distortions. I was a part of a 3-judge panel. I didn't write the decision. Justice Milton Wharton, esteemed colleague of ours from St. Clair County, who is serving this year in Justice Melissa Chapman's seat, appointed by Justice Carmeier, wrote the opinion. I joined along with Justice John Barberis, my colleague, also a colleague from the Metro East. And this was a case, pure and simple, where the judge allowed a trial to proceed, even though the defendant, who was accused of this reprehensible, just sickening act, but this defendant was in the intensive care unit of a local hospital and incapacitated, unable to attend his own trial. And yet this judge abused his discretion, as the court found, and allowed that trial to proceed. It's all about the right to attend a trial, your own trial, the Sixth Amendment, the right to confront witnesses. And really, for a sitting judge, and one running for the Illinois Supreme Court, to use this case for political purposes is disgraceful.
Why wasn't he traded in absentia?
Well, because he was incapacitated. The judge allowed did try the case in the absence of the defendant, but we found that the defendant, being incapacitated, was unable to attend his trial. This trial could have been continued because it was a bench trial. But whether it was bench or jury trial really is irrelevant. But someone who is incapacitated in the hospital has the right to be at their own trial. That was a 3-0 decision by the court, and I stand by it.
How often have you been on the bench that's had a case that maybe from the outside looking in, say we'll call it from a layman's point of view, that maybe at first glance they would be flabbergasted? Does this happen very often in your experience, David?
Well, you know, 13 and a half years on the bench, folks look at situations, and yes, it can be confusing to the public and so forth, but it is outrageous and not, in my experience, for a sitting judge who sits on the same appellate court. She wasn't on this panel, but to criticize a decision like this is quite frankly teetering on violating the Illinois Code of Judicial Conduct, Canons 3 and 7, a couple different provisions. You know, making statements that commit or appear to commit the canon with respect to cases or controversies that could come before them. And you know, this is a case that is now, by the way, we didn't release this defendant. We sent the case back to the trial court. Now, what happened with the defendant as far as the bond and so forth, you know, that's up to the circuit court. This defendant is going to be tried for, you know, on these charges. But it's our job as an appellate court, and it'll be our job as a Supreme Court, when we find that a trial court has abused their discretion or misapplied the law, it is our job to reverse the case. And that's what we did in this case.
All right, so the people's decision was not wrong.
It was not wrong.
Okay. Now, and because it's interesting, when I was speaking to your opponent yesterday, I said, look, he could have written a dissenting opinion, and he had written dissenting opinions on some of my cases. And I noted that yesterday in the conversation I had with your opponent.
Yeah, well, if I would have disagreed with the decision, I would have wrote a dissenting opinion. But I do believe in the right to trial. I believe in the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution, as it is applied to the states through the 14th Amendment. No matter how reprehensible a person is or is charged to be, that's our job as judges. And it is really outrageous for a sitting judge to politicize a court decision, you know, with the disgusting ad that was run by her, not her, but an independent committee, but she owned it in her press release.
Right.
And I tell you what, I've talked to sitting judges, retired judges over the last week. I've heard from several Republicans and Democrats, and every, to a man, to a woman, are outraged by the conduct of my opponent at this juncture in the campaign.
These elections, like I said, you mentioned Carmeier. You know, I was involved in that election 16 years ago, one of the most bitter and divisive things that I've ever been a part of professionally, and also one of the most expensive things when you look from the outside in. And there's been a lot of money pouring in. Elections are expensive, and then, of course, you've got to rebut and all the length goes. So the question is, David, how do you achieve independence? How do you stop that donation from being an investment in a judge and an outcome? How do you stop that? How do you cycle? Because people, well, here's a bunch of money. And sometimes later they go, remember me, I gave you a bunch of money.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, the campaign committees that each of us have and that I have raise money. Judges are prohibited from soliciting money on their own behalf. And I've always followed that rule, and I've never solicited the money from anyone. My committee does that. And I never look at the records. And so, you know, I do not know who all is contributing. Now, I might go to an event and someone's there, and so, you know, maybe they contributed. But that's not something I look at, nor should I look at. And justice is not for sale with me. I appreciate all of the support I get. And those, obviously, who've supported my campaign committee. But that has zero effect on how I'm going to rule as a judge. You know, there's a U.S. Supreme Court case, Caperton. It talks about standards of when a judge should recuse him or herself. And, you know, that's when the contributions, you know, could show a significant, you know, from a particular party, significant effect on the campaign. And, you know, if ever there was a case like that in front of me, then it was brought to my attention, then I would have to, you know, take a look at that and follow the laws set forth by the U.S. Supreme Court. But I don't know who's donated to me. I've never looked at the list, and I never will.
David Overstreet, he is a Republican candidate for the Supreme Court in the state of Illinois. Final question, and we're running out of time, David. David Overstreet, Republican candidate. Why you? Why should somebody put the check next to your name on the ballot 1 week from today?
I have striven over the last 13 and a half years in serving the public in the judiciary as both a trial judge, which I think is very important, by the way. I've made those decisions in the trenches, and I'm the only candidate who has. Every type of case that comes before the Supreme Court came before me as a trial judge. And I've served on the appellate court. But most importantly, I'm grateful to have the reputation of someone and as a judge who is fair and impartial, who has proper temperament, treats people right, and has integrity, and also meets the requirements of the office. The Judicial Advisory Poll gave me very high ratings and significantly higher in those categories that I've just mentioned. But I think you can also look at the way I've conducted myself in this campaign and looked at my opponent. And who do you want to be as judge? Who do you trust to be fair and impartial and not to politicize the process? And I certainly hope that you vote for David Overstreet. It is my honor to be running for this position. It is just an incredible responsibility, and I'm grateful for this opportunity.
David Overstreet.
The voters for their vote.